Oh, look, it's been quite nice with a bit of rain. Everything sort of perked up and got quite green. But you know, things like cyclamens can go in now. They're all, you know, those wonderful woodlands plants that grow so well under deciduous trees. If you've got one and you're wondering for something, cyclamen are great. Chrysanthemums are coming into show. Our camellias are still flowering. There's so much going on in the veggie cat patch. If you're one of those people that loves your roasted root veggies or your winter stews, now's the time to be planting a lot of that stuff. So swedes, carrots, parsnips. You can throw in potatoes if you're in a frost-free area still. unfortunately, I'm not one of those people, so I can't plant potatoes. But you can be putting in, you know, your lettuce, your leafy greens should keep you going all through autumn and all through winter, and they'll keep your health quite high, I suppose. You know, if you've got a lot of that sort of good greenery going in. Also pruning on your major trees. You can be deadheading on a lot of those perennials. Some of those summer flowering perennials that are really died back now are looking really leggy. Cut them down. You'll find new growth at the base, like penstemons, etc. Or maybe not penstemons, salvias, but the many different forms of. And you can cut those almost to the ground, to those main stems. You'll see tiny little new shoots coming through. You cut them down, they'll take off again. So, and a lot of your spring flowering bulbs can go in now. So, you know, it's good to dig over that ground and put those in. Oh, and another thing too is do a little bit of soil remuneration. I mean, green manure crops are great at the moment, and they're a really good way of, I suppose, rejuvenating a large area of soil for very little money. But side of the road kind of manure bags, etc., mixed with that green manure, and you get the best mix to plant your next crop in, or your next group of plants in.
Give us a call right now, 1-300-222-936, if you want to line up and get a question through for Tino. Shall we get on with some gardening?
Most definitely.
Let's do that. You can give us a call or a text right now. The number to call is 1-300-222-936, and we have lines aplenty if you'd like to call. Peter in Riverside, good morning to you.
Good morning, Joel. Good morning, Tina.
Morning, Pete.
Morning. I cut down a bunch of phytostroms yesterday and mulched them.
Yep.
So I've got a rather large pile there. Now, I've prepared at the moment 3 garden beds for some garlic. I've made it as soft and as light as I can using some aforementioned cow manure, horse manure and stuff.
Lovely.
So it's been sitting for about 3 weeks already. I put in some elephant garlic last week. When can I mulch? Do they need some light before the mulch? Because invariably it's going to get inundated with the grassy weeds, and I know they don't like competition.
Yeah, look, the mulch will help with suppressing a bit of that weed, but depending on the weed, sometimes, you know, those weeds are just too vigorous, I suppose.
Yeah.
So, yeah, look, the other thing too is garlic will tend to shoot when you get that frost, you know, that likes that colder overnight temperature, and then it triggers the plant into shooting. And in mulching too thickly, that can sometimes be inhibited. But no, look, I'd put a thin layer of mulch down over the top of that just to I suppose, prevent any of that weed coming back. But I'm sorry to say, sometimes during the season, you're going to have to probably get down on your hands and knees and pull those weeds out.
Righto, okay.
If it's twitch grass, if that's, or winter grass, any of those sort of grassy ones tend to be quite vigorous over the
Righto, pole. Okay. And also, I've got a crop of beetroot in, which I put some loosened mulch over. Should that be being pulled back now and let the sun get to the top? Is that
not necessarily? If the only problem with it is they'll keep too much moisture around the plant itself. But those beetroot will be quite young, are they? A couple of weeks ago, you put them in.
Oh no! They've been fully... probably 8 weeks.
Alrighty, well, then nearly. Yeah, look, you could pull them back and allow that sun in. You might get a little bit more development of them, as rapid development. But if they're already going well, look, we're getting nice sort of clear days for this time of the year. And we're also, I mean, the overnight temperatures are dropping. But no, I'd you know, choice is yours on that one. You could leave it on there. I would probably be pulling it off just in case, getting to the end of that crop, you know, or when that crop's starting to mature. That's, you know, if you might lose a couple if you leave the mulch on for too long, and it's that sort of getting it over the line, I suppose.
I just didn't know whether the sun needed to get on top of the fruit.
No, with those, because a lot of their, I mean, they're all leaves. Beetroot and silver beet, kind of the same thing. So those leaves, as long as they're not covered, they'll be feeding that root underneath, and you'll get a nice big round beetroot. I'm already hungry. I love beetroot, and I haven't planted any this year.
Will not buy any canned stuff anymore. If I run out, I'll just wait until next week. I make the best.
Good on you. And they can be planted. I mean, all the books will tell you certain times of the year, but if you trial planting beetroot, you know, every month or so, say, you might figure out for your area, because we have a lot of these different microclimates, for your area, you might be able to squeeze in cheeky little crops here and there. But it's something you kind of got to trial yourself as far as on your site.
Okay.
All right, mate.
All right, thank you very much.
Good on you, Peter.
No, my pleasure.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
There's a text coming from Featherlegs Dan here saying, totally random thing here. Anyone that knows me probably knows I swear a bit too much but for some reason, when an ABC newsreader says, and here I'm quoting, because it's been in every bulletin this morning, total bullshit, I can't help but giggle a bit. Thank you for that, Featherlegs. Yeah, that's actually a quote from President Trump saying that about the report that's been out about him, you know, this week. I'm the same. I love that. I love it when I hear, you know, a serious newsreader. And you can always hear there's a little bit of joy in their voice when they say it, isn't there?
Get to say the word.
We're on with the Peters this morning. We've had Pete from Riverside. We've had Pete Marshall from the community shed. And now it's Pete from Wynyard. G'day there, Peter.
Yes, good morning. How are you? I planted a black mulberry, English black mulberry, about 4 years ago.
Yep.
And for the past two seasons, I've got nothing off it, really, only a little sort of dried up wizened things. And I'm just wondering, do I need to feed anything particular or just put it healthy?
How many years ago was it? 3 years ago?
4 years ago I planted it, so I got it from a nursery, so it'd be probably, 5, 6 years old now.
Yeah, look, it should be producing by now. If it's producing good fruit by now, is it getting ample amount of water? You're up in Wynyard. I would have thought you would have got...
I water it quite well.
So it's just...
The other thing is, I've got apple trees around it as well, so I'm just wondering, they might be rubbing a bit, but...
Are they forming the fruit, but the fruit are just a dried kind of... They're just not forming that well.
No.
Look, I had a white one that was like that, and then it just formed really poor fruit. You know, and other white ones, they were quite juicy and good. I'm not too sure, to be honest. It might be that water is sometimes an issue. Sometimes it's heat. Like, you get those blackberries, you know, that aggregate fruit that's the same kind of fruit. And, you know, you get those really hot days and the fruit just sort of frizzles up. But mulberries have got such big leaves that are shades, and the fruit all sort of tend to ripen in underneath. So that's less of a problem. Sorry, just going through a bit of a mental checklist here for you, mate.
No, just plenty of water.
plenty of food. And you've got nice soil up there too. It'd be
absolutely. You want to see my stuff and grow. This year I got about 50 kilos of passion fruit. So
wow. <my soul. laughs> Well, if there's any going, send them south if you need to. with the drying of the fruit, I'm not too sure, to be honest. I can't. You've got the food sorted, you've got the water sorted, your climate's great for it. The only thing I could think of is that intense heat. Sometimes I've seen it on there's a big mulberry tree out in a paddock in the middle of the Coal Valley, gets no water, no anything.
Should I transplant it before it gets too big?
What's that, sorry?
Should I transplant it somewhere else in the garden?
If it's in the wrong spot, and they do transplant quite well. They're quite a tough deciduous tree, so it wouldn't mind too much, but that's probably, you know, its position is probably not your issue. It's
No, I didn't think so.
How are the apples doing around it? Are they all okay?
Well, Well, I transplanted those from my neighbour's fence because he was complaining that they were dropping over on his side. So I transplanted them all into one particular area in the garden where they're all in an orchard, like, you know.
Yep.
It's not a very big orchard, but it's, you know, fairly crowded, I'm afraid, yeah.
Well, I've got 10 trees as a collection and I call that an orchard, so don't worry.
Yeah.
It's all good. It's all good. Look, if anyone's got any ideas, anyone listening in who's got any ideas, call in.
I shock it into life like an apple tree?
Yeah, that's where you could do that. You could go through and girdle. You usually do that come the late winter, early springtime, just with a bit of wire around. You know, I always advise people, if they've never done it before, to do it around one major branch rather than the trunk of the tree, because if you get girdling wrong, you've basically, you're wind barking. If you get it wrong on one branch, you're only killing that one branch. So you can just cut it below and hopefully you'll get a reshoot.
Yeah. Another question I was going to say was, can I put one of the branches down and get a couple of grafts off that one?
Definitely. Yeah, you can do hardwood cuttings of mulberry trees.
No, I've tried that. It doesn't work.
No, you didn't. You've got to knock those second set of buds further down off, and you can take quite a long cutting with them. But if you're willing to try it again this year, do it in June, and it'll cost you nothing. But certainly you can bend those branches down. You can aerial layer them, even, I think. I've never tried on a mulberry, but I think you can actually layer them as well.
A bit of moss around and tie them up with a bit of plastic.
Yeah, that's it. Or even you can even, if that branch will get to the ground, you can even just bend it all the way to the ground.
That's what
and
I was
then...
going to do. You know,
oh, right.
Yeah.
Oh, brilliant. Yeah, that's fun too. Because then you get...
You were talking about seed bombing before.
Yes.
Someone did a nice seed bomb on me. They threw a nappy over.
A nappy.
Yeah, nappy.
And a baby grew out of it.
Is that where they come from, Joel?
I've
got to talk to my
mum. I thought they came from mulberry bushes. I thought they came from under cabbage.
The cabbage. Isn't it inside the cabbage? The cabbage leaves?
Something like cabbage plant. Yeah. It's really annoying. I mean, you know, there it was at the gate. I mean, you know, it doesn't take that much to take it home. It's one of those throwaway things, you know. I mean,
yeah. Look. In. I suppose trying to put.
Maybe they saw that sick tree and they thought, here's some manure.
Well, look, if you get those biodegradable ones, all nappies these days contain little crystals that soak up wees, and those, they're basically water crystals. So you can sort of, if you've got biodegradable nappies, you can actually plant.
I wasn't going to open it up and find out. No way.
Fair cop, mate. Fair cop.
Yeah. Let's not encourage people to dissect strange nappies on the street. That's a bad idea, Tino.
Yeah. Well, my finest.
Look, we will see if the wisdom of the crowd has an answer on your mulberry tree, Peter. It may have just been that really hot week we had. And there's not much to be done about that except hope for better weather next year.
Yeah. It did it twice. It did two seasons on a run, so it's got no excuse, really.
Well, maybe it's just a dud plant. Is that possible, Tino?
Well, there are genetics. That's where it comes to some plants of the same type can have different genetics. I've got artichokes at home that some of them just don't produce good heads and some of them do. And that's what all we've been doing as gardeners for the last 1,000 years or farmers is selecting those best ones to do that best thing. But, you know, the more I think about it, the more I think the climatic conditions, looking at the mulberries out in the fields that I've seen where they're dry, you know, and you get those really hot days, it could be that. And being that that's probably the most simple answer, that's probably the right.
Well, I must have watered it well to get 50 kilos of the passion fruit.
Yeah, that's...
And there were black ones too. It wasn't the weed one, like, you know.
It's not necessarily the amount of water available to the plant. It's the intensity of the heat on the fruit itself.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
All right. Best of luck, Peter.
I bought it in a nursery. It cost me $70, so it should be a good one.
Yeah. You'd hope so, but look, we'll see if the wisdom of the crowd has any further ideas.
Good. Thanks very
good
much.
Good on you, Peter. Bye.
Cheers, mate.
We have lots of lines free right now. I think it's a little quiet, it being Easter. If you've got a gardening question, this is obviously the weekend to ask it. Give us a call, 1-300-222-936. You're listening to ABC Radio Hobart and across Tasmania. We've got a few more texts coming in. The village people say usual happy market at the village Triabunna tomorrow from 10 till 1, plus Club Motori Italia visit with their wonderful cars and great coffee van. That is from the village people there. And the Signet Market is on tomorrow. That's Sunday from 10 till 2 p.m. Thank you for that. We've got some questions for Tino coming in via the text as well. I'll ask him for those after 8:30, I reckon. First of all, though, Gloria is in Lotta. Hello, Gloria.
Hello. Look, I have a mulberry tree, and this may bear some bearing. When the wasps were there last year, all the mulberries went dry. Yes. They went in and sucked them. Juice out, but when the wasps weren't there, I had lots of lovely big fat mulberries.
Yes, and the wasps have been particularly bad this season. So that could help. Thank you. That could be a very, very valid point as far as why he's getting dried fruit. Do you have the white mulberry or the black mulberry?
The English black.
Yeah, an English black. They are lovely. They are very lovely fruit. And nice and big too.
Yes. I do have to watch Phytophthora.
Yes.
And also Clorot, but I don't think that does it. I think it's not the wasps.
Yeah, it's something happening to the fruit itself rather than the tree. Just a little question for you. I did hear a rumour that with black mulberry juice, if you rub the leaves on a stain on the clothes, that it gets it out. Would you know anything about that?
I grew up in Adelaide with a big mulberry tree, and you get a green mulberry.
Oh!
A red one. A light red one, and you rub that over it, and it just comes off.
Oh, right. Oh, so it's not the leaf. It's thank you very much for clearing that up. I knew it was worthwhile asking the question. So.
That's all right.
Thank you very much.
Lovely. Thank you, Gloria.
Cheers, Gloria.
Thank you. Thank you. Okay.
Now, the Gloria, wisdom of the crowd.
That's right.
Yeah.
Gloria did break our record there, but Peter from Deloraine is back to help us be all Pete all day. Hello there, Peter.
Good morning. I heard it was a special day for Peter.
Yes, so
I thought I'd call in. I live on the top of a block of flats. I don't even have a garden, but it was just Peter's today. No, I kid. I'm calling because a couple of years ago I put in a passion fruit, which I understand are all grafted plants if they're bought from nurseries and so on.
Most are.
It gave me sort of one good year, and then it was just sort of a fairly invasive thing. So, and ever since I've been trying to kill it, and the shoots are just coming up everywhere, and a subsequent passion fruit I've also bought seems much keener to sprout from under the graft.
Yes.
Can you help me with any tips whatsoever to get the passion fruit to do the thing it should?
Right. As far as the... Not all of them are grafted. I mean, generally the black Nelly Kelly or the yellow Panama Red or the Panama Red or the Panama Yellow, I think, is the other one. They're the three types we generally get down here. Every so often, though, a nursery person will plant seed and have seedlings. They're very vigorous, but they I'm not sure of their durability. I lost one, whereas a grafted one right next to it survived. Now, as far as the new one goes, the suckering from the base is kind of normal. When the it just means that graft hasn't either quite taken that well, and it just needs you to knock those sucker roots off to redirect the energy of the plant up in through the actual graft point. What can also happen as well, though, is any damage around the roots will promote more of that suckering from the base. So be very gentle with your passion fruit. When you put it in, I tend not to tease any roots when I actually plant them. I'm as gentle as possible with them because their reaction is to sucker from the base, send up rootstock. So, yeah, clearing that off, that's fine. Next year, that should lessen. And over the years, you know, as soon as that graft's really taken well, then if you don't disturb the roots, then you shouldn't get too much more suckering from the base, although they still do it in certain situations. The older one that is becoming quite weedy, has it still got those big glossy leaves on them?
Yeah, look, when it gets going, it still produces, or the I was going to say tentacles. That doesn't sound very...
Tendrils? Yeah.
Yes.
tentacles, I like that. That's wonderful.
They do produce big, lovely leaves, but I don't think I'm getting anything from above the graft anymore, and the shoots will be sprout out of the earth even metres away from where the plant started.
Yeah, so you've lost the top of the plant, and it's just your rootstock that's there. A few options for you is, I mean, grubbing it out completely, you'll need to do that for a few years because the rootstock underneath there is very, very vigorous. the other option is you could possibly graft onto it. Have you ever grafted before?
I used to take a lad to a farm school and did some grafting, so I haven't been able to kind of follow through what we did, but I've had a go at it.
Yeah, as you know, it's just Lego for big kids, you know, it's just it's just like, you know, cutting one bit and sticking onto another and make sure it binds. So it's a simple process. You could possibly give that a go, or you could just grub out the old one and replant a new one. I'd say they're your best options.
Fantastic. If I could impose maybe another question.
Yes.
Oh, well, thank you. Where I live, the soil is very clay. It's sort of a red, heavy clay. It's pretty tricky to get things to grow. I usually, when I plant something, I'll dig a big hole and put in lots of nice soil, and the plant will go really well, I suspect, until the roots.
Yes.
The extremity of that, and then I've got all these sort of half-grown plants.
Yes.
Is there something that'll grow in the clay and perhaps help break it up? Maybe a tuber or something.
Yeah, but you're in a frost-free area.
Look, where I'm growing, I can make it frost-free. I've sort of put sheets of plastic out over winter to get the worst off things.
Well, because you can put spuds in now if you're in a frost-free area. If you're in a frosty area, all that's going to happen is the top growth will get cut off with the frost. But the old, I suppose, wisdom is to plant spuds in a clay soil, and they'll tend to break it apart. But what I tend to do also is plant lettuce as well. And when you plant the lettuce, when you harvest the lettuce, I tend to just cut it off. So I put a crop of spuds through. So you're digging over the soil as you go. I usually add quite a bit of gypsum to that soil, which is a clay breaker, but it's only a Band-Aid. It just helps to dig the soil over for that season. And then you harvest the potatoes, and then you put lettuce straight in. And when you harvest the lettuce, you just cut the lettuce plant off and you leave the roots in there to rot down, because the potatoes will break up the big, you know, break up the soil that's very dense. And then those lettuce roots, they're like tiny little fibers, I suppose, and they find their way into the soil. And then that, as they break down, they leave little air pockets, I suppose, and they lighten, you know, the organic matter there as well. But that's where the important part is, the organic matter, getting that into your soil, that will end up loosening up your clay. What it'll do, the organic material will get in between the clay particles and stop them from binding back together into big clods or big colloids. And that's sort of the long-term solution for dealing with a clay soil. But as far as you after sort of plants that will grow well in there, or you sort of annual crops or annual flowers?
Anything I can eat is what I tend to plant.
No, cool. Oh, then in that case, there's plenty. I mean, all veggies will really go well because you're cultivating that clumpy soil, and you get your crop in for like 3 to 6 months, and then you're digging it out again and digging it over. So a veggie bed is usually quite well cultivated. And if you're adding organic matter to that, then fine. What I tend to do with other plants, say you want to plant deciduous trees, apple trees, etc., pears are very good in a heavy soil. Things like cherries tend to be a little bit kind of prima donna-ish, and apples will do kind of halfway in between as far as their tolerance level. Digging a big hole is vitally important. I usually go in clay soils twice as big as the pot, but also half as deep or twice as deep as the pot, because it's the drainage down below that you want. So I'll usually do that. But then over the next couple of years, I'll be adding manure around the drip zone of the tree. So just in a band, like a well, I'm creating every year. And what that does is it traps water down and it disperses it to the root zone, those feeder roots that are around the drip zone of the tree. But it also it cuts out on that culture shock that the roots get. As you said, they're growing into that lovely soil you've provided for them. Then they're hitting your heavy clay, and they're probably wrapping around the clay just like they would in a pot and becoming root bound. So by adding that organic matter, by getting a fork and coring down, just driving it into the ground out from that drip zone and giving it a wiggle, then putting organic matter down, it allows that to get down in there, and it allows your drainage to, I suppose, the soil to drain better, but it also improves the soil further out from the tree stump or tree trunk as it grows. So that's, I found that to be quite effective as well.
Oh, look, that is very comprehensive and gives me good homework to good things to think about when I'm out there with the spade.
Cool.
Good on you, Peter. Thank you.
Ta, mate.
Thank you.
More questions with Tino coming up shortly.
Weekends with Joel Rheinberger and the Caterpillar Killer.
All right, lightning round, Tino. You ready to answer some quick texts?
All right, I'll stretch up first.
All right, Linda in Coles Bay says, "Hi, Tino, at Josterberry, what can be done with blight on a largish bush, a very poor producer of berries the last few years?"
A blight on a Josterberry. It could be, it's not the mould. Look, there are certain varieties. Okay. Ensure good drainage. Make sure that the plant is open so you can prune out the center of it. And in a Josterberry, that sometimes it's so messy, they just blah, blah, blah everywhere. So cut out the middle of it, thin out the branches and allow airflow through. You might need to change the position of it if it is in too shady a position or too wet a position. Sorry. But it might be that it's not blight, that it's actually a mold virus, a mold fungus. So, but yeah.
All right, you might need to give us more information
that
one.
Yeah, yeah.
All right, Anne says, can a 2-metre magnolia tree be transplanted in the Launceston area?
If it's the evergreen magnolia, yeah, you could do it. It's a risk. With the deciduous magnolia, definitely wait for it to go into its dormancy and then do it then. But if you are doing the evergreen one, make sure, the other one, every time you transplant a plant, make sure you provide good soil that it's going into, make the transition period from out of the hole to into the new hole as quick as possible, and use things like seaweed. It's a good transplant shock minimizer.
Joy says, when do you plant strawberries and what soil prep is required?
You can go, spring's the best time. You get a good easy crop. You can plant them sort of now, a little bit earlier than now probably would have been ideal. But soil preparation, I give good cultivation. I add a nice bit of organic matter. And I usually go and raid either the local row of pine trees somewhere, like there's one up the road from me, and you just go down and get all the mulch from under that. That's a really nice mulch for strawberries, and you just lay that on about.
They like the needles.
They like the needles, yeah. I mean, they like straw. That's where they get the name strawberries,
yep.
Or the old English strinberries, but I'm not too sure where that comes from. But let's go with the strawberry thing. And but the pine needles are very good. They're light and fluffy. They keep the plant up and the fruit off the ground. They allow, obviously, the water to go through. They break down beautifully. If you've ever gone in underneath a pine tree that hasn't had any of those needles harvested and you dig down sometimes 30 centimetres, the stuff in underneath is beautiful and black. Now, a lot of people say put the pine needles down because they acidify the ground. That is true if they're green, but they also possess pine oil, which is a growth suppressant. So the main thing is just that it's a free product. You can use straw, but I use pine needles because it's free.
How do you get rid of the dreaded crawling periwinkle spreading weed, says Jack from Kingston. Glyphosate doesn't work. Well, glyphosate doesn't work on this show, that is for sure.
No. I have had a lot of time spent with old periwinkle, me and periwinkle. There was one place all I did was grubbed it out and grubbed it out and grubbed it out and grubbed it out and I got on top of it. There are a few other that's in a situation where you've got other plants around. So you know, you have to just continue to grub it out. So and those plants will get bigger and they'll help you with the job themselves. They'll suppress that periwinkle. Yeah. Mulching is another way as well. But solarization, if it's in a big open area and you can get you can basically cook it in the ground and you've got no other plants that are any importance there for you. You can get a big sheet of plastic, and you lay it, you cut everything down, obviously. You lay it out over the ground, you put some bricks on it, and what that does is cook the ground. Now, that usually is done over the warmer periods of the year. We may still have some days where you can do that. And you
might manage the day in Hobart where it's going to be 26.
That's it, yeah. So, and that's really what you need. You need obviously a few weeks of that, but that's another method you could use to get rid of them.
Rose says, good morning. I heard you mention chrysanthemums. I have them, never grown them before. Do I cut dead heads off just under the head or further down the base? Will they grow more flowers?
There's a lot of different types of chrysanthemum, but yeah, generally just deadhead them, and they can create new flushes. I've got big
deadheaded just under the flower.
Just enough to give you a little spike to put in a vase if you want. They will. Some of the more bushy varieties with the smaller flowers will continue to produce flowers off that. Some of the bigger varieties, they will still to produce flowers. I got given a massive one last year by a grower, and I'm really excited now because it's sort of coming up. But those ones, you get less flowers. So, yeah, cut them. You'll get more, but, yeah, probably not as much as some of the smaller flowering varieties.
Diana says, morning, Tino. Can I leave apples on the tree even when they're ripe, or do they go off? I thought they might keep better than picking them all and storing them.
Well, some of the varieties will keep on the tree for pretty much all winter. There's a place in the Coal Valley where I drive past regularly, and they've got a variety there that just holds on. A lot of those cooking apples as well, I think, have a tendency to do that. I tend to pick. I mean, I pick when I need, and that's usually, for me, one apple a day, whereas if it's Joy, the crop goes all at once because she wants to make something out of it. So yes, you can leave it on, but you do run the risk of leaving fruit on the tree. Of it, you know, fruit's yummy to us and everything.
Possums,
you know,
come and get it. Yeah.
Yeah, birds will take a peck. You know, grubs will come in, and so, I mean, less so at this time of the year. But yeah, you do run the risk of losing that fruit if you leave it out there. It's probably best just to pick it and store it in a nice cool spot.
Sandy Bay Rowing Club, I'm told, will be selling good quality pea straw on Anzac Day, 1 to 5pm. Nice. You can pre-order that or rock up and grab it. We've got the number here. If you're keen on that, let us know and we'll let you know the number. And finally, BJ says, good morning, Joel and Tino. Best time for transplanting wisterias and azaleas?
Wisterias, when they're dormant, they're a mess, though. I tried there. They tend to want to go everywhere, their roots. So make sure you trench around it quite nicely if it's, quite far back from the main plant. If it's a large one, if it's small, they're a doddle. Azaleas, after they've flowered, it's probably good now. You can, you'd again be very gentle with them. If it's one of those little azalea carumiis that they tend to, you look at them wrong and they tend to drop their heads at you so they can die. So, yeah.
And this is a suggestion about the mulberries. This is from Nonnie. She says, Harrier jet insects suck my mulberries and ruin them. I'm thinking of netting next summer.
Yep.
Thank you very much for that, Nonnie.
No, that's probably the case. That's, yeah.
I knew exactly what she meant, the Harrier little Harrier jet insects. All right, Monica, let's get back to the phone calls. Monica is in Gravelly Beach. Do you mind if we call you Pete just for today, Monica?
Yeah, why is that?
Well, all the callers so far have been Pete.
Been Pete, pretty much. We've had five Petes and one other name.
We just don't want to break it.
Yeah, you better call me Pete.
Okay, then, Pete, what's going on with you?
There was a caller earlier who said he didn't want to weed garlic, and I thought, well, I agree with him. So what I found out, I know you have to weed eventually, but what I decided to do over the last 5 or 6, 7 years, really, was I thought, look at this weeding bit. So I kept some of the big Australian newspapers, you know, the bigger pages.
Yep.
And I mound it. I make a mound and a furrow between the garlic.
Yes.
And then I put about 3 sheets of newspaper over the mound. Put some wood or something between to hold it down, wet it down. This is after I prepared the soil, of course. And then I get a little knife or something and cut a little cross into where I'm going to plant the garlic clove. And I put the garlic then, according, you know, finger width depth or whatever it is, into that cross in the paper. And I don't have to weed until,
later.
Months later, because the weeds don't come up. Or if they do, they're not living very long. So I don't have to weed very much, weed my garlic very much.
That is genius. That is pure garden ingenuity. Garlic growers use big sheets of plastic and they cut into them and they'll roll them out and put them back every year. So they last for quite a while. But yeah, the Australian newspaper, like those big broadsheet ones, great idea. That's brilliant. And three sheets to the wind.
Yeah, three
sheets. The only issue I found with that kind of thing, if you've got a heavier soil, sometimes you can hold water near the bulb. And if it's not in active growth, so right at the beginning of the season, that's a problem. With the plastic, it can be near the end of the season as well. But usually with the paper, it's sort of broken down a wee bit. But it can hold that moisture in around that bulb before it's actually actively growing. So you can heighten your risk of rot, but that's, you know, most years you'll be fine with that, certainly.
Well, I've got sandy, I'm at Gravelly Beach, sandy soil, so for me, thinking about that now, that's not an issue.
Yeah, that's it. That's won't be a problem where you are, and that's where it, you know, it may be somewhere else, but it's such a good idea, it's worth a go everywhere.
Very neat, Monica/Pete, thank you. Have a good one.
The other thing I'll do is, because the birds then come along and like to dig around there, I've gone to the local tip and got some baskets from freezers and that, and I put that over the top of the newspaper.
Yeah.
A freezer basket. That is brilliant.
Yeah, yeah. They're a great size. cheers, Monica.
Good on you. Pete, come on, get it right.
Sorry, Monica.
Thank you. Bye.
Does that mean we have to be Pete?
No. We've gotten rid of Pete. No, that's why we got you in, Tina. Let's see Felicity, a.k.a. Pete, in Margate. Hello. How are you doing?
Hi, P2.
G'day, Felicity. How are you doing?
I'm going well. I wasn't going to ring. I feel like I'm stalking you sometimes.
In a very friendly, gardeny way.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, stalking's very appropriate.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. It's different.
Just a little question about sort of short-term crop rotation.
Yep.
Like, obviously, you know, tomatoes, garlic, potatoes, not an issue. But where you might get a couple of runs of something during the one season, like I have the world's most fantastic crop of bok choy at the moment, and I'm thinking I might wring another one out of it, but I'm sort of a bit pressed for space just because, you know, it's just sort of a couple of plantings within the autumn.
Mm-hmm.
Can I get away with planting more bok choy in that same spot just for this?
Most definitely. Yeah, most definitely. Look, everyone, that's one of the biggest things with crop rotation, and you'll see all these sort of crop rotation plans and charts on the interwebs, and most of them won't give you an actual time of how long the period that you use that bed for is. The reality is most of us gardeners use it when it's available and when we want the crop to go in. Crop rotation is something I used to follow very, very stringently. I had my plan and I'd made my plan up years before and I'd worked to it and it worked really well. These days, though, I'm a lot more flexible with it for a few reasons, but the main one being is there was a crop I was planting in a bed. I was supposed to plant broccoli after my cucurbits, my zucchini, and I was kind of going through my crop rotation thinking, well, why do we crop rotate? We do it to minimize pests. Reoccurrence of pest problems, and we do it to minimize the nutrient, you know, each plant draws out different nutrients. So, you know, they can be, brassicas are very nitrogen heavy, so they suck out a lot of nitrogen. And I had powdering mildew on my zucchinis like you do at the end of every year, and I was planting broccoli in there, and it didn't make sense to me. I thought, well, if we're doing it for pest minimization, then I'm planting a crop that's just as susceptible to this problem as the one I'm ripping out.
Uh-huh.
So now these days I'm much more flexible, and I'm, you know, sneaking cheeky little crops of things in here and there isn't a problem. And as far as your bok choy goes, if you don't have any problems with your bok choy currently, there's nothing to say that your next crop will have any problems. And a lot of the pests that attack our brassicas go into dormancy over this time of the year anyway, so it's kind of a win-win. So I'd say don't worry, go for it, do what feels right, and you'll have wonderful bok choy all year round.
Absolutely wonderful.
Thank you.
Cheers, okay, Leslie.
Thank you, Pete.
Bye.
Now we're the Pete.
Yeah, that's right. It's Pete's all the time. You're listening to ABC Radio Hobart and across Tasmania. I am Joel Reinberger. With me is Tino Carnevale, who is taking your calls about gardening questions. Mike in Ulverston, hello, how are you today?
I'm good, thank you.
Morning, Mike.
Good morning.
How can we help?
It's this problem with a lime quat tree. I think my wife's been on in the past. It's been transferred into a larger pot.
Yep.
55 centimetre diameter. We used citrus compost to put it in.
Yep, citrus mix.
Yeah, and now this was about 6 weeks ago.
Yeah.
And all the leaves on the tree are now curling downwards. It looks very unhappy.
How often has it been watered?
It hasn't.
It hasn't been watered at all?
It was watered initially.
Yep.
As the instructions. But it hasn't. It's been out in the rain, obviously, and when it's rained, it's got wet.
Yes.
Oh, but we're trying to move it to avoid wetting it further.
Yes. And is it in a plastic pot?
Yes.
Yes, okay. Moving it somewhere where it hasn't been. Because that's the thing, water issue with citrus. And I think I remember from a few weeks ago the call. The water issue is a lot of people overwater their citrus at this time of the year and they'll underwater them at other times of the year. So I like citrus in the way that they will tell you when they need it and they will tell you when they're sick. The good thing about that is they will respond well when you get the conditions right for them. Underneath the pot, are you able to sort of put your finger into one of the holes and give it a little poke? just to see, because sometimes you'll get like that wet area at the base of the pot. And if it's sitting in wet, that's obviously a drainage issue. But, I mean, new potting mix, new pot, I wouldn't suspect that of being the case. It's just that, it's sounding like a water issue. But,
The pot was actually at the bottom. We put some of that polystyrene chips.
Yep. Right.
To enable the free drainage.
It sometimes doesn't always work like that, but like old gardening books will tell you to put crockery in the pot of your in the bottom of your pot, and the reason for that is actually some books I've got, some old English books I've got, will tell you to do it for drainage, and other ones will contradict, saying it's for wetness. Now from doing that, it's for wetness. It depends on how the aggregate is put in there. But generally, if you put aggregate in and then soil over the top of it, it'll hold moisture around the base of the pot. If you put aggregate in the bottom and then put some kind of film over it, like a geotextile, like a plumber's fabric, and then put the soil on top of that, that'll tend to help to drain. It's just that once you get the smaller particles of the potting mix and the larger particles of the polystyrene or gravel in or potting, or pots in my case, it tends to do the opposite of what you would think it would do. It tends to want to hold the water at the base of it. So that's why I'd go up and have a little poke with your finger and have a little check and see if there's moisture around there. If there is, and if you're finding that it's really wet in that bottom zone of the pot, then it's easy fix. Just pull it out again and just refill with normal, with your citrus potting mix and removing the polystyrene out. But I'd be testing that first.
Right.
Yeah. Sorry for the bad news. You've probably just done all the work too. The other thing you could probably do, you could give it a feed as well, although if you've just put new citrus food on it, I mean new citrus potting mix on, it's probably got enough food to last it this season. It's just that you can get the plant to draw a bit more water up by encouraging more growth, as long as there's air there for that. You know, as long as it's not sitting in water, but yeah, that would be my advice. It's just a little bit of detective work around the base of the pot and see if it's sitting anywhere.
Some of the leaves were going yellow as well, so we give it a little sprinkling of Epsom salts.
Lovely. Did it help? Did it green it up a smidge? Yeah. Because, well, if that's the case, then it might be. I would be checking the mix to see if it's too wet, because plants' roots need water. Well, they need air to take up water. They need to be able to breathe so they can do take the process of taking up the water. If they're sitting in water, your roots aren't taking any up. It's actually creates a cycle of the roots stop taking the water up because there's too much water, and then the roots start to die back, and then the plant rots. So that's where addressing that drainage, which I suspect may be the problem. I'm so sorry, mate.
Best of luck with that, Mark.
We'll do that then.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Cheers, Mark.
Chris is in Lena Valley. Hello, Chris.
Good morning. How are you?
Good, thank you.
Morning, Chris.
I'm planning to get rid of the last bit of grass lawn that I have. I want to plant it with the herbs.
Yep, lovely. I love it. Yep, great. I'm fully supportive of you on this, mate.
Okay. What's the best time to do it, and what are the best herbs that I can plant that will suffer a little bit of walking on?
Yep.
Not too much, but still thrive.
Best time to do it? Well, firstly, thyme is a really good one. Little carpet thyme or creeping thyme. So there's some really upright, like culinary thymes, but woolly thyme's a beautiful one. Less tolerant of being walked on. It doesn't mind being walked on a bit, but there are some really tough varieties of prostate thyme that just cover really well. Best time to plant those is usually in the spring period, but every so often in the autumn you can find punnets. And the reason I say in the spring period is because you can find an actual punnet of thyme with like 50 plants in it. You can buy little 4-inch pots for about $5 and they usually have quite a few plants in them, but if you can find the little punnets, they're gold. They're like $4 for all the plants you need to do a whole big area. So they're the two times of the year that I would be doing my planting out of them. You can be planting by seed of thyme over the spring period, early spring. Just prepare your soil really well. And to be honest, with seed, I haven't had a hell of a lot of success. I mean, they'll come up, but it's sporadic. You know, you chuck 50 seeds down and you'll get 5. So, you know, whereas with a punnet, you've got the plants there and they're really easy. You can layer if you've got bits of thyme that your mates have got that you, and if you can't find any carpeting thyme, you can layer thyme. You can just basically find a long bit that runs out from the main plant. Strip a few leaves off at some point and then put a rock over the top and that'll take root. And then once you come along a couple of months later and you can cut that off. But chamomile, the lawn chamomile, can be really nice and it smells beautiful. Mm. There's also, there's a few, oh, you want edibles. Yeah, that's probably it for the edibles. You can, that'll create a nice walkable surface. I have seen people do the annual strawberries, the Fragaria Vescara, I think, and they're little low strawberries, and they'll form fruit that you can eat, but the reason I didn't like that as a lawn is because I was training on strawberries, and it was like a waste. Every time I took a step, I had to forage for a little bit of food and you know, munch on it, and then I could step safely in that spot, so.
What about mint?
Oh, mint, yeah, any of the mints, really, but look, mint, when it gets vigorous, it'll cover the area, but you'll be walking through, 30 centimetres worth of foliage. That's why those little chamomiles and thymes are good, because they only get up to about 5 centimetres, 10 at the most, whereas a mint, big leaf, you get a bit of dew or a bit of rain over it, and you walk Wooshka. Through it. And, yeah, you get wet socks and, you know, wicking effect up your legs and stuff.
Which gets aggressive,
and also that, and but, yeah, you could go for something like just your standard mint, your English mint, because I was just thinking like chocolate mints, etc., but they don't really like being walked over that much. But the English, or the stock standard Mint, fantastic. Actually, one mint that might work really well is the native Australian mint, the Mentha Australis. That's a, it's a beautiful little mint. It's got a tiny leaf and it tends to crawl quite a bit. And it's a little bit more punchy with the mintiness with the normal mint. So, yeah, that might be that might be a good option for you as well. So,
good on you, Chris. Best of luck with that.
Okay, thanks very much.
Thank
Cheers,
you.
Chris. Thanks, mate.
It is 5 to 10 on ABC Radio Hobart and across Tasmania. Let us see if we can help Gay in Newtown. Hello, Gay.
Hi.
Morning, Gay.
I used the biochar.
Yes.
Which has given me the best vegetables I've ever had.
Yeah.
The most forked carrots I've ever had.
Yes. Well, that would be the nutrient that it's holding, I'd say, without looking at your soil. And it's just that...
Oh, the soil's good.
Yeah, yeah. Carrots like poor soil. They like to grow in rubbish, really.
I didn't think of that when I put the biochar on. I thought, right, no fertilizer on carrots.
Yeah.
And I also sprinkle a bit around my kumquat tree, which is growing great leaves.
That's probably a really good tip for the gentleman with the kumquat that rang in before. If he does have to pull his plant out, just get himself a little bit of biochar and put in the base of the pot. It's actually something I'm going to do with my citrus trees. That's a great idea, Gay.
It's been miraculous, but is it activating the nitrogen in the soil?
No, all it's doing is it's adsorbing nutrient to it. So it's acting like, if you look at them down a little microscope, they're like a whole bunch of straws stuck together. And all that does is allows the nutrient to stick to it, for want of a better word. And then they make that available to the plant, so the plants can access that nutrient when they need to. So, well, when they get to it. Does that make sense? I think I explained that.
Yeah, it does make sense. So if you wanted to you wouldn't use it to induce flowers.
No, it's more of a, if you think of it, more of a nutrient sponge within the ground. So, and then it just, those plants can get down there. It's like a bank and they go, yum, 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 yum. They eat up all the food in the soil. That's the sound of plants eating. Num, num, num. And then the biochar is just.
I thought it was more like slurps.
Yeah.
Obviously, I'm growing different plants.
My plants are polite. They don't make any noise at the dinner table.
How boring, Joel.
I'm with you, Gay. So basically, that's just absorbing when you put, say, fertilizer down and the nutrient goes into the soil profile. The biochar is allowing it, just suck it or stopping that from leaching all the way through. And it's holding it to it, and then the roots can grab onto that as well. And activated biochar, which is maybe what you've got, sorry. That's the same thing. It's just biochar, but what's been added to it is nutrient. So usually with mine, I'll get charcoal or biochar out of my fire or my little brazier thing, and then I'll put that, smush it all up with a rock or something, put that in a bucket of water, and then I'll put manure into that or compost. And then that nutrient's just going straight into the charcoal. Then you put the charcoal in the ground, and then that's kind of, it's like little feed stations for your plants.
So if you use biochar in your veggies, then you don't need to fertilize with anything else?
No, you can you fertilize still with stuff, but if it's activated biochar, then you shouldn't have to fertilize definitely that season, maybe even the next, or that crop, but you'll still need to fertilize your crops.
Do you use biochar each year?
Growers will, it's fairly new. I've been putting on my crop now for the last 7 years, I think, in my beds. And every time I replant at home, I usually chuck a little bit of that in the base of the ground as I go through. But also I'm adding my biochar, my homemade stuff to my compost bin. So I'm actually adding compost and I'm actually adding biochar at the same time. That's your best bet is that you still need to fertilize.
Gay, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you.
Bye. Thanks, man.
Now, look, Mary, Jan and Andrew, a.k.a. Pete, and Pete, are waiting online, and we'll get Tino to come out and have a quick chat to you over the news. So do hang on there, folks. It won't be too long. Tino, lovely to see you as always.
Thanks, Joel. And thanks to all the Petes out there that were so nice today.